Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:15 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 21st. Well, I thought we'd kick off today with oil because it is still one of the most volatile price series anywhere. I thought the comparison in the futures curve today versus yesterday was certainly something that was worth highlighting. The April contract at one point yesterday was trading at minus $40. And in here today, it's at plus $10. So it's up nearly $50 on the day. But that is, I think, more to highlight the fact that prices flow down the commodities curve. And what we've in fact seen is a significant contraction in the contango. So when we look at the difference between the futures prices, between the May contract and the June contract, well, it's now only $3, and yesterday it was significantly more. But the point, of course, is that the reason we had such an acute move was because of the massive dearth of storage capacity. So while we've had a significant pop on the upside in terms of that April contract, when we look at the second month, we're probably going to see, a better representation of what in fact is going on. Prices broke down in here today, but we're closing well off the low. There's the scope that we may be at the in the region of a low, particularly when we look historically, that prices getting down to the mid-teens is a level that we haven't seen in an extraordinary amount of time. In fact, we have got to go all the way back to the lows in the prior bear market to approximate the level at which the price closed in here today. That's a pretty incredible development, but it is removing a source of what is effectively a tax on consumption from the global economy. But of course it is going to have a deleterious effect on the energy sector. Well, the other point is that we're going to see bankruptcies coming through in the energy sector. That's absolutely inevitable. And there is obviously going to be some clear pressure on the smaller companies that have got less in the way of financial resources, whereas when we look at some of the largest producers of energy, like ExxonMobil, they have been comparatively unchanged over the course of the last 3 days, while the volatility in the oil market has been extraordinary by any stretch of the imagination. And one of the primary reasons why we've had that extraordinary move in energy is because of the US oil fund. They habitually trade about a quarter of all the open interest in the West Texas Intermediate futures contracts, and they tend to roll it all in one go. They sold approximately 100,000 contracts yesterday, and that's why we had such an incredible decline in the price. Of course, they've simply rolled it over into the next most liquid contract. There are now more than 2 million contracts open on the June contract, which is obviously an incredible amount of liquidity in the contract, but it also represents significantly more than global available supply in any one month. Therefore, when we think about what's going on, well, we've got a lot of trading going on in the oil market. Prices are very low, and it's likely that we're going to remain under pressure, but perhaps not quite at the lows that have been underway for the last while. Meanwhile, natural gas prices have been steadier. They were in negative territory in here today, but there is the additional point that with production starting to contract, then that should also hit the supply of natural gas, because natural gas is such a, or is the supply of natural gas is heavily dependent on it's being a byproduct of oil production. Now, when we look at the wider stock market, there has been a very clear tendency among just about all investors to buy the dip. And buying the dip has been by far the most popular investment strategy over the course of the last decade. In fact, it is the strategy that works best in a secular bull market. And we've been in a secular bull market. The question that is yet to be answered is, are we still in a secular bull market? And when we look at the S&P 500, it pulled back very abruptly declined by approximately 1,200 points, then rebounded by a bit more than 600 points, so a 50% retracement of the decline, and now it's in negative territory in here today. The size of the 3-day decline, or 2-day decline, really, is not quite as large yet as the small pullback we had at the end of March, but I think it would be Pollyanna-ish to anticipate that the market is going to go straight back up and sustain moves to new highs. We have got some obvious hurdles to overcome. The first is the auto sector. Well, it is not just a significant source of employment for many developed economies, but it's also a major retailer. And the size of the bounce we've had has been modest, to say the least, despite the fact that it might look large on a logarithmic scale relative to the size of the decline. It just does not look like a particularly impressive rebound, and not least because it has only retraced about half of the overextension relative to the trend mean. So there is potential that we're going to see a retest of the lows and potentially some of the weaker sectors to exceed their lows. That's, I think, built into the price at this stage, particularly when we look at the size of the declines. When we think about the banking sector in particular, it has rallied, but again, not in an especially dynamic manner. And it's going to be difficult for banks to make money in a zero interest rate environment. I think that's also one of the more important points. The yield curve spread, it might not be negative any longer, but we're not at spreads of around 250 basis points. That's where we get really very liquid environments, where banks get wide margins on their lending businesses, and they have ample access to liquidity, so then they're much more encouraged to make loans. What we are instead, I think, presented with is central banks attempting to control both sides of the yield curve. Not only are they engaging in very low interest rates, but that they are buying bonds right across maturities. They are involved in the repo market, the commercial paper market, the investment grade corporate debt market, high yield, and they're going to continue buying at all maturities until they get the result that they want, which is economic growth. But nowhere in that plan is there the incentive for them to widen the ability of banks to make profits. And in fact, that is potentially a political hot potato for a number of central banks around the world. So it's quite likely that we're going to see banks remain under pressure. And that's particularly true in Europe, where the European Banking Index closed at a new low today. I think the problem with looking at banks anywhere is their route to profitability, regardless of what country that might be in, is really inhibited by the conditions that we have out there in the wider market, whether it is in Europe or the USA, the UK or Australia, the banking sector remains under pressure. We don't really have the same condition, for example, in China, because the banks are arms of the government, but even here, there is precious little to support the view that we're going to see an additional rally. In fact, the banks are being told that they have to go out and find small businesses to lend to, but the small businesses are in dire straits. So that is basically just money going out the door with very little chance of it being repaid. And that also represents a rather significant headwind for China's banks. When we think about India's banks, they were weak heading into this crisis. And they are now also experiencing some profit-taking. And the size of the rebound that's been put in over the course of the last couple of weeks, well, it leaves a lot to be desired in terms of the speed and, I think, size of the pullback. So when we've got this very weak environment for banks generally, then the onus for providing stimulus is falling squarely with central banks and governments. Now, when we think about financial conditions, then certainly we've had an infusion of liquidity, and that has helped to improve financial conditions. But we are nowhere near the kind of financial easiness that we had back at the end of 2019 or 2017 or 2014. And it's going to require significant additional moves to really improve the financial conditions of the wider economy. Now, I think it's important to pay attention to all of these factors, because when we look at some of the best performers, well, the NASDAQ was down in a pretty dynamic manner in here today, and it has unwound more than half of its bull market. Now, it is packed full of companies that have generally tended to be among the beneficiaries of the lockdowns, whether that is computer game companies or whether it is cloud services providers. They've all, or indeed Amazon, which has seen a surge in demand for deliveries. Those have all benefited. But it's worth pointing out that when we look at, for example, Shopify, which has been one of the most impressive in terms of its rebound and got all the way up to a new high, well, it didn't quite close on a downside Q reversal in here today, but it really wasn't far off it. And downside follow-through tomorrow would certainly highlight a peak of near-term significance. Amazon, which has rallied 50% over the course of the last week, was also down in a reasonably dynamic manner. In fact, it's the biggest downward dynamic we've seen in at least 2 months. So it was off the low. We may get some additional pause and consolidation, but I think the reality here is that we've seen a peak of at least near-term significance. Then when we think about the luxury goods sector, Hermes has been one of the best performers. It got all the way back up to test the 700 euro level, and it posted a rather large downside key reversal in here today. So that has been supported by news that luxury goods shoppers in China have been flocking to their stores, and they've had a couple of very good days. But the rest of the world is still in lockdown, and it is not simply reliant on Chinese demand, although obviously that is a substantial part of its demand profile. The big point is we just don't know how deep the economic trouble has permeated into the wider economy. The one thing we certainly know is that China engaged in lockdowns for about 6 weeks, or really maybe 2 months, and then had to give up on it. It's not simply because they got control of their infection. but that they came to the conclusion that if they were to lock down any longer, then they were going to do irredeemable damage to their economy, and they just simply had to open back up again. Now, that has not meant that Chinese consumers are back out and walking around and spending and shopping the way that they had before the lockdowns. And I think that is pretty similar to what we're going to see in the rest of the world too. Lockdowns are probably going to end within the month. We're going to see more testing, and the result of those tests is going to be a reduction in the mortality rate. That's almost baked into the pie at this stage, because the only people who've been tested when there's a lack of testing are people who are expressing symptoms, and the people who express symptoms are those that turn up in hospital with the most severe cases. When you test more people, and particularly outside of the medical apparatus, then you're going to find fewer people infected, you're going to find people that have got less serious infections, and there are already lots of people who have got antibodies. They've already got over their infection because they were so mild they didn't even know they were infected. There was the results of a study from Los Angeles, which tested about 700 people and tried to look at people from different economic backgrounds, and it found that upwards of about 4% of them had antibodies already. Well, when you start to multiply that up, it suggests that there are probably about 400,000 infections in the city, and a comparatively small number have in fact died. Well, that then has to factor into the real need for lockdowns. It doesn't mean that people are going to become any less aware of the risk, or that they're suddenly going to become much more social in their activities, but it is a foil that will be used by governments to argue that lockdowns should be ended and economic activity should start up again, because the ability of governments to continue to fund social services when there is no money coming in is something that cannot be done indefinitely. Therefore, I think it is quite likely that we are now going to get some pause in consolidation. Now, I think the most important point is that we have really got three chart patterns in the world today. The vast majority look like the Russell 2000. That is almost universally true for all of Europe and a large number of other indices as well, whether that is going to be in Brazil or a number of the other emerging markets. We've had these massive reactions against the prevailing trend. Now, that's the first chart pattern. We've had declines that are in the order of 50% for some indices, and in the order of 70% and even 80% for other markets. So that's a crash. There is absolutely no getting around the fact that it is a crash. And following a crash, two things happen. One is that you can then get a rather sharp rebound, which unwinds some of the short positions. The price then comes back down and tests the lows. The markets that sold off because of contagion selling and have got internal strengths that can power them through into a recovery will not go all the way back down to the low, and they will start to trend higher in a more impressive manner. And within about a year to 18 months of the low, they'll be back at their peak. For those that are most acutely affected by the epicenter of risk, they're the most likely to go into these long, prolonged ranging phases. So, for example, when we look at some of the cruise lines, they pulled back from type 3 top formations and then broke down, and they are down in the order of 70%. And it is going to be a prolonged period of time before we're going to see the majority break up and out of type 3 base formations. There will, of course, be some that do better than others. But when you look at these cataclysmic declines, then support building is probably going to take some time. So that's the first chart pattern, the crash. And after the crash, it's only then a question of which are the most affected by contagion selling and which have got internal weaknesses that are going to condition or create conditions that they have to create base formations before they can recover. And the recovery can take a long time. Then we have the index like the NASDAQ, which has been able to hold the region of its 1,000-day moving average. There is no other index has been able to hold at the 1,000-day moving average without pulling back below it. And it is now susceptible to some additional consolidation. Now, if this is still a bull market and technology is going to continue to remain the leader and is going to continue to represent relative strength and the solution, in broad terms, to humanity's problems, the lows will hold, and that we're likely to see the pullback find support above the lows. But it is looking quite likely that that a process of consolidation is now underway. When we look at some of the largest companies in the world, like Google, then it has encountered resistance now in the region of its 200-day moving average, and therefore the $1,000 level is a key area of support. If we think about where people have stops, it's really not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that a lot of stops are in the region of $1,000. Microsoft has also rallied impressively, but then pulled back in a rather sharp manner in here today. The speed of the advance was almost mirrored at the speed of the decline. But now the question is, how much of that decline is it going to in fact hold? So that's where we are right now. Then the third, I think, chart pattern is the hybrid between the two, where we had the S&P 500 pull back in a dynamic manner. It did pull back more than the NASDAQ, less than the Russell or other global indices, and has subsequently pushed back above the 1,000-day moving average. But now we're probably going to get some ranging. This classic type 2 top formation, where we get the failed upside breaks and then massive reaction against the prevailing trend, almost certainly is going to result in a period of ranging above the low, below the peak. And the big question subsequently is, will it be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean? That's going to be the clear arbiter of whether we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The most important point after that is, will the 200-day moving average remain above the 1,000-day moving average during a period of ranging? If the 200-day moving average falls below the 1,000-day moving average, well, then we really are going to have to question the overall secular bull market hypothesis. And that could suggest that we are in a much more prolonged period of ranging. When we start to think about what that could look like, we could be ranging for years. Medium-term top could be ranging for anything up to 3 years. And that's on the assumption that it's still a secular bull market. And I think we're not quite there yet in making that determination. The fact that among the five biggest technology companies, they have in excess of $500 billion on deposit, and that they are more than able to fuel their own innovation, is something that makes them much better positioned than they were back in 2000. But nonetheless, economic contraction that we're looking at and the damage that's been done to confidence and consumption is something that is going to take time to overcome. And gold prices were in negative territory in here today, although well off the lows by the close. There is still an overbought condition. And so far, it has done nothing more than consolidate. This has been, so far, a relatively modest consolidation, but we certainly can't rule out the potential that it becomes more volatile. Personally, I've introduced stops, and that's particularly true for both silver and palladium. Silver pulled back, it was off its lows in here today, but having rebounded pretty impressively, it's now at the first area of potential resistance around the 200-day moving average, and platinum is still not capable of sustaining a move above the 800 level, and it really does need to rebound in the short term and push back above that level to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. What we are starting to see, however, is that palladium has pulled back in a sharp manner in here today, down $256. And I think this is a pretty textbook example of what we see from an accelerated decline that is followed by a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. There is absolutely no question that palladium prices accelerated. They doubled in the space of about 6 months, gave up almost all of the acceleration, rebounded in an incredible manner in just the space of a week, and now we're likely to see a prolonged period of ranging. It could be years before we see palladium prices above $2,500 again. I think it is much more likely that we're going to see supply starting to come into the market and the demand for the metal start to moderate, particularly because of the weakness in the automotive sector, and that we're likely to see significantly lower prices from palladium. And of course, the lower the price comes, the more of the metal that has been held off the market by hoarders is going to come onto the market, and we're likely to see it become a very volatile price series. That, I think, is something that is starting to feed through, that there are individual pockets of extraordinary volatility while the volatility in the wider market has been subdued. The VIX index, the volatility has popped back on the upside from the 40 area, not in an especially dynamic manner, but one thing that we know is that it's a good indicator of important lows. So that low, the peak in the volatility around 80 does represent at least a near-term and potentially medium-term low for the wider market. But it would be unusual to see the volatility come all the way back down to the lows. It usually takes at least 6 months for that to occur, and we're really only a month into this so far. So I think it is quite likely we're going to see at least some consolidation of the better performers. And then there is the potential that we're going to see bigger declines among the weaker performers. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting is that a number of the bigger companies in the S&P 500 no longer have a price-to-book ratio. And part of the reason for that is because they bought back so many of their shares that it exceeded the book value of their assets. So that is a clear indication of just how aggressive they've been in buying back their shares. And they no longer have that recourse. So what is it that's going to support their shares during an economic contraction? And Boeing remains weak. McDonald's is another one of those companies that they had been buying back their shares in a very aggressive manner. Now, it's also a dividend aristocrat. So it's had the impressive rebound, like we've seen, for example, on the S&P 500. But if they're going to sustain their dividend, then they're less likely to be buying back their shares. And if they're less likely to buy back their shares, then the incredibly impressive trend higher from 2015 to 2019 is unlikely to be repeated in the short term. I think it is much more likely that we are going to get a significant additional bout of volatility, where The outlook for the company is, I think, broken down some more, and people start to really look at the value of the dividend, the value of the business, minus the support that the price has had from buybacks. These are, I think, some of the kinds of determinations that investors are going to be making over the course of the next few months. It's not all going to happen at once, but we are certainly due some pause and consolidation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.